say it this way. I'm constantly negging. That's my tool, negging. I just say, where are we with this? And so I'm constantly negging. Then when somebody's doing something, boy, I'm going to highlight them like crazy. And also I'm going to support them like as much as I can to get them moving more forward.
Okay, and thanks to Seattle for that question. We have Green Bay, Wisconsin up next, followed by Rockville, Maryland, to Randy's location in Green Bay. The line is open. Go ahead with your question, please.
Hello, this is Randy Brennan with Bell & Health. John, could you talk a little more about how you actually worked through the issues that happened between the nursing executives and the quality department? We're really working on spread here, and I want to make sure that we don't do some of the things that maybe you guys did, and we could learn from some
sure.
of the things that helped.
Well, I observed it from a distance because I'm at the corporate. It happened at one of our facilities. But I would say the problems were that the quality department didn't go directly enough to nursing and nursing executives and really make sure that they had a level of support, that the communication wasn't as strong as it should be, and that they really had people on board. And also I'd say the other thing, though, would be, but even when they shared, I don't know that nursing had bought into this enough, and that's where the executive above the nursing officer needed to help align, saying this is a critical thing. So I don't think the sharing was as good as it could be, and I don't think the alignment was as good as it could be. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
And thanks to Green Bay. And we have about 3 minutes remaining in this Q&A session, and at this point our last caller is Rockville, Maryland. To Deborah's location, the line is open to Rockville. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Two quick questions. One is, are you using stakeholder synonymously with champion? And the second question is there research in the literature that suggests that crew resource management really does work in hospitals?
Let's see. The answer to the second question is, there's not real strong evidence on that. ARCT did a review of that in their safety studies, and they didn't show real strong evidence because mostly it's not used that much. I will give you one quick example that's not in the literature but from an organization, and simply the turnover rate for nursing in the surgery has dramatically decreased because of putting in the concept of briefings. I think this is early on. I think this is a fertile area for research, but I think that there is a great opportunity, and I'd be glad to, I don't want to talk too long on this, but talk about this off sometime if you want. And then what was the first question?
Do you use stakeholder and champion as synonymous?
No, I'm not. I mean, the stakeholders are the people who are important, but your champions obviously may be some of the stakeholders, but they could be separate from it. I mean, they might be a stakeholder, but they're not necessarily the champion, or the champion probably is a stakeholder, but he's not the only stakeholder there.
And thanks to Rockville for that question. It appears we have now a call from Dennis's location in Chevy Chase, Maryland. Chevy Chase, the line is open. Was there anyone at that location that had a question? Apparently not. It looks like Seattle is trying again. To Paula's location in Seattle, the line is open now. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Donna Daniel, and I'll hold my question until Gail has an opportunity to present. Thank you.
You're welcome. And that takes care of the questions we have, and that timed out well. That was about the amount of time we had allowed for that. So back at this point to Gail for her presentation.
Thank you. Well, hello, everyone. We are continuing now in the second part of the discussion on spreading improvements in healthcare systems with two main objectives. One has to do with keeping projects moving, and the second with the importance of measurement and feedback. And we'll draw on the experiences in the last couple of years at Iowa Health System to do that for you. Iowa Health is 10 hospitals primarily in our project, but we have an 11th hospital license now. That's a small facility for OBGYN, and it's in the Quad Cities on the Illinois side. So we have 9 hospitals in Iowa, and the other 2 are in the Quad Cities on the Illinois side. So we do share a little Illinois support with our OSF friends. The excitement at Iowa Health definitely built around the same medication project, what was called Quantum Leaps, that you've heard from John Whittington at OSF. And as we look at the success of our hospitals, it really has to do with this idea of creating pull through the system. The system-wide learning was the key. And as we brought people together, we knew that thou shalt really doesn't work in Iowa. It is a local phenomenon, the way we deliver care here, and we support that as a system perspective. But we knew that if they could get together and share learning more, that they would enjoy learning from each other and that would help us build belief. We also felt that we needed to learn a lot about spread. We knew how to spread some things, but this was a major project with strategic implications, so we had to work a lot harder on it. Luckily, along the way, we met Kevin Nolan and Marie Schall, and John Whittington was working on some of the same things, and so we were able to share with each other some of our frustrations and things that we were learning, and I think that we've had a tremendous learning curve, and we've learned a lot in a short time. One of the things about Iowa Health that has become important to us about planning for SPREAD is that SPREAD is actually a strategic element in our large strategic plan for the system today. We've come to this point in time learning as we go, testing ideas, adjusting, and then, of course, learning from everyone we can. We like to think of this process in the words of Robert Quinn in his book, Deep Change. It's sometimes we must build the bridge as we walk on it. And so as we go east with John, we're kind of building this little bridge that has to do with SPREAD. I would encourage you also to keep the slide of the framework for SPREAD in front of you. It has become very meaningful to us the more we learn about doing the SPREAD work. And as I sit back and look at that drawing, I see today that the piece on the social system, where all of the different testing units come together to learn from each other, are really the fuel cells for what looks like a rocket going in the direction of building better ideas. And the piece that I would like to work on now with you at the top of page 8 has to do with keeping the project moving and two-way communication, and which actually includes this concept of two-way knowledge management. And you'll see knowledge management on that drawing with arrows going in both directions, which is very critical. We believe that leaders need to provide context and also help make sense for everyone about how their role or the project they're working on connects back to the importance of the mission and vision. Our mission speaks to the fact that we believe we are improving the health of the people and the communities we serve. So certainly reducing harm through errors and adverse events in our system is a way that we can improve health of people and communities. So it is a strategic concept, and was very quickly this program of Quantum Leaps, where we first started learning the process, was built into the top for strategic goals for the year. And that really set us in place to make some progress and to get some belief that we at least needed to work on it. When I think of two-way communication, I also think of a complexity metaphor from those gurus who think and live in this world of complex adaptive systems or chaos theory. They use a lot of metaphors, and the one I like the best in this regard is that of the perfusion of the human body. Imagine now the heart pumping blood, and the blood goes out to all parts of the body and then returns to the heart to be refreshed and reoxygenated. If that blood flow is impinged at anywhere in the body and the blood supply to a part is diminished, then the health of that part diminishes and eventually the health of the body diminishes. And that helps us understand the importance of two-way communication. We need leaders connecting mission and vision, speaking of the criticality of whatever it is we want to move forward on, and then helping teams understand that their roles are valued. A story about criticality from one of our facilities. We were working on reducing falls in hospitals, and I had a request to come and help one of the teams get started. They were bogged down. And what they were bogged down in was the fact that they believed that the nurses on a specific unit really didn't own the need for assessing the patient for being at risk for fall and actually then implementing the prevention protocols. It was a very busy unit, of course, which I think you can all identify with in the nation today. But where did this come from, that they thought the nurses didn't own assessment? We think of nurses as that, thinking that they are assessment. That is what they care about. They care about the condition of the patient. And so we believe there was some kind of a disconnect as we went in to help this group get started. We used a technique for failure mode effects analysis that is a simplified form that really encourages people to talk to each other. It's less on the kind of the technical part of the scoring and more about how people talk to each other. And as they talk to each other, this concept of the nurses really didn't own this process came back up. And interestingly enough, there were frontline people in the stakeholder team, and they pushed back and said they didn't feel that that their leadership had made it easy for them to do this process, and they really didn't understand the criticality. Why did they have to do this? People fall all the time in the hospital. They don't get hurt very badly often, but sometimes, of course, they do. And then we had the tough discussion of the criticality of why we don't want people to fall, and that is that 20% of elders who fall will get into a death spiral from fear of falling and die within 1 year. Now, why in the world would we ever let anyone fall within the walls of our hospital if we think there's any possibility that that could shorten their life? And when that story then was pushed out, everyone felt it was critical to work on this issue. So the ability to help people understand the critical need for moving forward really can help you with making the project move. So that's one of our lessons learned. And we also realized that we need to keep this drumbeat going. What is the vision? How do we keep the message coming from all levels of the organization? I often use a quote that I'm afraid I can't give you the citation for, but the quote is, vision leaks. We need to keep refilling the minds with vision. And if you think of that image of a leaky pail of water that you might be trying to carry somewhere, that the water just runs back out again. And really that's what happens with our minds, especially when we're very busy and focused on task. We need to be reminded how important the work is and why we're going where we want to go. We also believe that as leaders, we need to seek and hear feedback. There's the other side, the other part of the two-way concept, that this information needs to be heard from the front line, the very important experts at the front line, but not just listening, but a type of hearing that allows us to not only comprehend but act, that we witness the struggle, that we welcome and act upon concerns, suggestions, and that we seek and use their input. One of the ways that we do that here at Iowa Health is that at the system level, we have a chief medical officer, Dr. Evans, who really is eager to hear from us what the frustrations are and the barriers, because he then can strategize how he will use that information to build context and make sense for the leadership team, who he is always pushing, pressing, and nagging about the work that needs to be done. And those kinds of messages are useful to us right out to the front line. One of the things that we believe is a message we learned from Jim Collins in his book, Good to Great. He writes, leadership is not just about vision, but it's also about creating an environment where the truth is heard and brutal facts are confronted. Moving on now to the discussion of multiple communication channels, and we do need to plan this. This is how we keep things moving as well. Oh, things like phone and fax and video conferencing, email, storyboards. And from the work of Nancy Dixon and the book Common Knowledge, this concept of explicit knowledge and how do you transfer explicit knowledge as compared to implicit knowledge. So on the explicit side, this is the kind of knowledge that's easily created on paper. That's why you can send it by email. That's why you can, that's the kinds of things like sharing forms that you could test rather than reinventing a form, something that you can try. Very simple processes are explicit knowledge, and that kind of information needs to be available to people easily, quickly. We need to be able to share those kinds of tools across the organization, across the teams that are testing. And things like annotated run charts, that makes a concept explicit when you can actually see visually in a small chart what's working or what doesn't appear to be working. So we use listserv, we use email, we use the extranet from IHI, and we also use at our learning sessions, anytime we get face-to-face, we like to have storyboards and progress reports. And then this concept that we also like to share both internally and externally, so with other people who are working on SPREAD that we've been talking with, and also OSF Healthcare. We do some specific things like asking about hardwiring. Hardwiring is this concept of making something permanent so that we can hold the gains. And we knew early on that was an implicit concept. People had it in their heads and it was hard to describe. But as we asked time after time during phone calls or whatever opportunity we might have, what have you hardwired lately? They began to get it. And then they could actually put it on paper. And it made it simpler to understand when you could see examples of it in your own project groups. We also like to have fun with some of this. And one of the things we do to help people learn the concept of SPREAD is that after they've been in the work for a while, I think the first couple of learning sessions, if you're doing collaborative work early on, they're just struggling to understand the change concepts. But eventually you get to the point where they're actually ready to move to a second testing unit, and that's when you need to begin to help them understand SPREAD. And so one of the techniques we use there is that we call it headlines, or headlines game, and it's when you would have storyboard or progress reports that you would ask people to write the headlines for the newspaper article the next morning that would describe the best thing that this specific organization that just reported is spreading. So it helps them think in a different way. We make that fun, bags of candy or whatever, some way of celebrating the fact that people are understanding what SPREAD is and then celebrating what the other organization is doing in SPREAD. I'm moving to the page, top of page 9, and we have this concept of the channels of communication again, and we're thinking now of implicit knowledge transfer. This is the kind of knowledge that's in our heads. It's hard to put on paper, and each situation is different. So what we're trying to do here is understand what someone did that was similar, but now we're trying to apply it in our situation, and we have to ask questions and think back and forth and brainstorm together. Those kinds of transfer of knowledge really seem to work better in a face-to-face setting. Once you get experience in working together at a team, I think that it's possible to do that by video conference or by phone calls. But particularly early on, face-to-face really is needed so that you have time to digest and brainstorm together. It's more of an understanding process where conversation makes a difference. And I think of the work of Patricia Shaw in her book, Changing Conversations in Organizations, where she discusses what she's come to understand is that when we talk together like this about important things that we need to move to in the future, that we actually organize our work and understand it better just through conversation. That sometimes we spend too much energy on fancy planning processes, strategic planning or other things, when talking together is really what gets us there. It helps us to evolve along the way. And, you know, in a way, that kind of helps us relax a little bit about managing SPREAD. The fact that people are talking together is how we spread this knowledge. And so we think that that's just a different way of thinking about it. I can give you an example of how phone calls can work, and that is that this Quantum Leaps Community on Falls has about 35 hospitals in it now, and these are all IHI-connected facilities through Quantum Leaps or Impact Networks, and they spent time sharing information by listserv and also on a website. But then quarterly we get together, and on those calls, they've never met face-to-face. We call that a virtual collaboration. But they get together, and someone will report what they've been doing. Now, these are folks who are working on teams to reduce falls across the nation, and so they're pretty familiar with each other's settings, whether it's MedSurg or Jerry Syke or whatever it might be. They've already been working in the process of trying to reduce falls. Then as they hear what someone else is working on, they actually become willing to test that concept in their own organization. It's amazing how many things we've spread across the nation just by having those phone calls. But these are folks who are pretty familiar with the process now, and they're just testing new ideas with each other. The will and commitment that we need to keep SPREAD moving and even a project moving, it helps. We need to have some evidence that the improvement works, and then that will help us build the willingness to do small tests of an idea. And these concepts are pretty, I think, intuitive. You would expect that we would need to share successes with each other and progress, what works, what doesn't. But something that I think is critical that we often forget is the feedback from the front line, not just from managers, and that we can use the story of real harm, particularly when we're working in the safety arena, to help people build the will to make a difference, to change the future. We use things like videos from Josie King. There are others on Pete Conrad and Sue Sheridan's story. Those things are real stories about others that are poignant and powerful. But what we want to get to now is building our own stories, our own testimonials of things that haven't gone well and how we can prevent that in the future. We think saying thanks in public is really important, and we have some wonderful examples of how people are able to do that. We have said thanks to 600 people in a spring forum setting. That's a meeting where the whole management team of the system gets together in the spring. And we're about to celebrate next spring in a really exciting way, and we'll be focusing on experts across our whole system. Those are frontline experts we're talking about. Another way that saying thanks has been very interesting is that we have a physician, Dr. Crandall, in Waterloo, Iowa, who says thanks in public by writing a thank you note to someone who's giving an idea during an executive walk around, and takes this thank you note to the unit and asks for the person. And in asking for the person, he says why he's here, that he's come to thank this person for an idea or a suggestion or a concern that they expressed. And then he's not disappointed when they don't happen to be there, because it gives him a chance to go back again and say again to a number of people, I've come to say thank you. And we also think that it's important to develop supporting relationships in all different directions, internally and externally. I call that connecting the dots, that quite often when someone's working on something, you'll realize that you know someone else somewhere else, whether it's inside our organization or not, who is also able to help, and they can brainstorm together. That really does help build will and commitment and keeps things moving. We have some examples of ensuring visible management support. One of the things that we've begun to do is to move our meetings around the system, and OSF does that too, so that they can visit different areas. They can actually do tours and things. And so we invited to our second Falls learning session in a different city the CEO and the chancellor of the college, the chief nurse exec, all came by to pay their respects and cheer on the team, but they didn't just come in and say hello and goodbye and leave. They stayed for lunch. They stayed and looked at the storyboards and things that really helped the team believe that they were proud of what was going on. And now we'll be soon going to another community to have a learning session, and we have the whole executive team wanting to come down and say hello and cheer the teams on, and that is amazing what that will do, to hear thank you from folks in that sort of leadership position. We believe in the constancy of purpose messages from Deming. We believe in beating the drum, as described by Jack Welch. But we also believe that we need to keep refilling minds with vision. Moving to the top of page 10 about keeping the project moving, there's more about the social system, and we've touched on that. Cheerleading through emails. We had an example where one of our teams was working on medication cards to get people in the community to own the fact that they knew their list of medications and would bring that to each healthcare visit. And that group won a wonderful recognition from nurse leaders in the state of Iowa. And so I sent them an email congratulating the team and telling them how proud we were and mentioning a little bit about what the project was about, but sent that to everyone who was touching the patient safety work at that time. Well, what happened was that the CEO at that facility sent a reply back congratulating the team, and but we sent that to everyone so that we could see how proud he was of his team. We think that this kind of activity doesn't just build will, but it also builds the energy that strengthens our ability to keep going. We also think that sensitivity to the workload is important. Everyone is very busy, and it's difficult to fit these things into their busy work lives. And we know that focusing on possibilities is something that's hard to do. And so we do work on changing the framework to possibility. We also like to stimulate creativity. Some of the examples we've used here are flying airplanes, paper airplanes, to do PDSA work. We used a jazz ensemble to help people understand how communication works. And a coming or learning session, we're going to use a fine artist who depicts communication and the barriers in communication between people. These kinds of things are kind of a twist. It's a fun opportunity, but it helps us think in new ways. We also think it's important to work towards the tipping point. We only need 15 to 20% of the people going to actually create the pull to happen. We believe that patients being involved in this social system give us tremendous energy. We just had another example this week of a gentleman who is pretty well-known in the state of Iowa, and he had developed diabetes, and he was really struggling because he was finding that his health care provider was not helping him with the diabetes and the fear that he had that he didn't know how to manage his own life anymore. And then he happened to get involved in one of our programs. It's an open access model in one of our clinics, and they are working on self-care for diabetics and helping them set goals. It provides education. It turned out to be a wonderful setting. The testimonial from this man at a recent meeting, and he just happened to be included for his perspective as a patient, was a tremendous energizing force for that team, and that's just one example of many. It's also important, we believe, that we engage people in meaningful work. If you look at the American Hospital Association's report, In Our Hands, it articulates how important it is that we help people do important work, or at least help them with the context of their work, that they can begin to see how important it is. So that makes a difference for us. We realize that we need to say it often because of this concept of the vision leaks. We also believe that saying thanks recharges people's batteries and gives us energy. This concept of plateaus is something that we learned from others who are ahead of us in spread, but the plateaus are going to be there. And just as John Whittington said earlier, if you expect some of these things to happen, then you can be better prepared to handle them when they do occur. The OSF Healthcare, we believe, when we think about building relationships, has helped us understand this concept of sharing beyond reason. Now, we often say we could steal shamelessly and share unreasonably, but when you have people you can work closely with, it's amazing what you can learn together. At the top of page 11, there's a concept of measurement and feedback in a two-way process again. And what we do with management and our measurement and feedback is that measurement has to happen on a monthly basis. Reports go in, and then feedback goes back to the teams. This information needs to be reported up the organization and down the organization. We believe that the teams at the front line who are working on it need to see their progress, and that patients need to see and like to see the progress, whether it's on storyboards on the unit or in other public areas. It's amazing the discussions we get into with them as they begin to try to understand what's happening on a storyboard. Providing regular feedback happens on a monthly and a quarterly basis. There are verbal and written reports, and then this concept that both John Weddington and I do, which is mentoring teams all the time. We believe that this two-way communication, again, going back to the chart, is very key. We expect them to give us reports on a regular basis, but we want them to also expect that we're giving them feedback on what we see as their progress. The slide on the bottom of page 11, the results from Iowa Health System, this is the drug event project, and you'll see that we started out at 20% and did manage to get down about 75% reduction in the first year. And then you'll see we began the second year, and that chart looks like it has a lot of static on it. Well, it does, and one of the things that we did was we tried to continue the monitoring while reducing the work to do the monitoring. And so we reduced the size of our sample that we collected each month and introduced a lot of static into the chart. There also may be some indication there that maybe we weren't holding the gains quite like we should. So we did do work to go back and make sure that some of our projects hadn't slipped while no one was looking. So I think that that paradox of balancing the need to monitor but the need to do as little work as possible is something that we think through as we're doing our spread work. On the top of page 12 is a more of a 10,000 feet view of how you can look at a process and evaluate how your spread is moving along. This is one of the elements of the medication safety project as described earlier, and this shows you the number of facilities as we went over time, how many were doing this element. This is the value mode effects analysis, which looks at a numerical value for risk associated with different parts of a process. So in the June of 01, one hospital was doing the work, and then you can see how many hospitals were added over time. We take a graph like this, one for each of the different concepts, and we put them on one sheet of paper, and then we try to figure out what's going on across the whole system in the whole project. And what we've learned there is that face-to-face learning sessions were the time when people built belief, and right after the learning session there was a boost in the activity. And that is actually borne out as we look at the various elements in that project. If we look at the bottom of page 12, here's an example of just one project. That's the chart of how they moved along in reducing the risk score. This RPN is the risk priority number, and we wanted a 50% reduction. They did achieve that, and subsequent to this data, they've actually reduced it even more. And there are a few elements at the bottom of that slide that you can see how they actually did those improvements. I'm at the top of page 13, and we're wrapping up the summary. The spread of improvements is an exciting work. It is a messy process, as John Whittington described earlier, but we believe that where you formally develop and carry out strategies to hardwire change in your organization, that you need to do that work before you can spread. So if you test an idea, then you need to figure out how to make it permanent, because in the learning of making it permanent, where we hardwire, that knowledge also needs to be spread to the next unit. And at that point, we need to be able to make these concepts as explicit wherever possible and use concrete examples that are helpful to the next groups. Don't start a spread project unless the topic is viewed as strategic. Otherwise, you're likely destined for failure. You can spread to a few units, but to get across the whole organization, it's difficult unless there is strategic support. We believe that someone needs to own the entire project, the planning, the strategizing. We also believe that successful ideas are easily spread. We need to build on belief, and then the will is developed. It's a lot less painful if you actually wait till you have one successful example to show. And then the idea of reinforcing the social system and relationships, the two-way communication. Don't leave these to chance. They also need to be planned. And one of the things that's nice about, like, the Impact Network, it's kind of a built-in relationship group, and it's very easy to communicate and share things in a family like that. You also need a relentless drumbeat for spread. We think passion's required, and we also notice that sometimes health is good at improving things, but we're definitely not good at holding the gains, and we haven't been good at spread. But we can build this bridge as we walk on it, and we invite you to join us in doing that work. And I'll pass this back to the moderator, and I think we should have questions.
Thank you, Gail. This is Kurt again, and all you need to do is press 1 on your phone's keypad, and that will bring you into a question queue, and then you can ask questions of any of the presenters. We have about 6.5 minutes remaining for questions at this point, and our first question will be to Shakopee, Minnesota, followed by Rockville, Maryland, and then Seattle, Washington. To Suzanne's location in Shakopee, the line is open. Go ahead, please.
We were wondering about the budget process for all of these new initiatives. Can you comment about how you budget?
Yes, we do have an opportunity to do some budgeting, and that is also a messy process because we don't always know when we learn from other folks what it's cost them. However, what we're doing along the side of this work is building the business case where we're actually collecting some information from one organization so that we can see the cost of it. I would say that we have now in place a better process for budgeting than we've had in the past couple of years, and that is that each of these concepts that we intend to work on in the coming year is well laid out. It has a spread plan with it and identifies what the change components are. Then it asks the individual participating organizations to identify their team, and that's how we begin to do the budgeting.
That answer your question, Shakopee?
Yes.
Very good. Thanks. To Rockville, Maryland, to David's location. The line is open. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you. This is David Intricasso at AHRQ, and I've been listening all along now for 5 weeks, and I'd be remiss if I didn't pose this question to everyone here this afternoon. What can ARC do or do better to help providers identify ideas, et cetera, for spread?
Let me jump in on that.
Go ahead.
Part of my thinking is the following. When it comes to healthcare issues, there are two buckets of knowledge. One, we have a strong bucket. The other one, we have a very weak bucket. The first bucket is the concept of evidence-based. We have tremendous evidence-based knowledge. I'll pick on the CMS project for the summer and say we know that you're supposed to give the antibiotic within 1 hour of the time a patient has surgery. The CMS study shows that we only do it right 55% of the time. What we lack in knowledge is process knowledge. We don't understand. We've tested our process for 30 years now, and the process has been dependent upon an individual person doing an individual thing at the right time. We know that model fails. And so what we need to develop is a level of process knowledge that most organizations don't possess today. That would be an area that ARC could be helping with.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful.
Do any of the other presenters have a comment they wish to share?
This is Gail, and I would say that one of the things we're working on that we have the least knowledge about best evidence is falls and what actually prevents falls. We're trying to build some of that evidence ourselves, but That's something that's not very well laid out in the literature today. We could use some help there.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, I would build on that, on Gail's comment. I think what we do too much, and what I think I learned along the way, is we do try to push out technical content without having the research, the evidence behind it that will get our adopters to say, well, that is worth doing. There's a lot of different dimensions to that, so I don't want to point any particular dimension, but there is a need for some evidence base. So I think it would be nice to be able to go somewhere for falls or anything where we could, or crew resource management, whatever it might be, to build up that evidence base, to at least to get started for the early adopters to think that there is some evidence for the work that we'll do.
Okay, thank you again.
And thanks to Rockville for that question. We have about 2 minutes remaining, and to Seattle, Washington, to Paula's location. Seattle, lines open. Go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Donna Daniel, and I want to thank John and Gail for sharing their experience and expertise. I am seeing that there are a lot of similarities and differences between these two large hospital systems trying to apply the or successfully applying IHI spread model and spread framework to their different locations and ultimately to the patients. I'm from a quality improvement organization, the QIO community, and we're one step removed from where I guess I see Gail and John being, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are on how QIOs can effectively apply the spread framework as they do work with providers in their state. So I guess it's quite a similar question to ARC, as the fellow from ARC posed, but coming from the QIO community.
Well, we're both building some experience in working with QIOs, and I would say that from Gail's perspective, the first thing is building on relationships. When we started to do the surgical site infection with our QIO, one of the first things they did was come to us and build upon the relationship we already had to say, if Iowa Health comes in, maybe we can even get more facilities to come in. And so working through us, we did bring all of our hospitals in, and then that built a belief for others as well, and they felt that they got more participation because we were willing to come to the table and help them cheer it on.
Donna, John, my thought is that the QIOs, though, can also help just by building the infrastructure to support collaboratives, that just building and gaining knowledge to do the collaboratives within the states is a very valuable asset that the QIOs can bring to each of their states.
We have about 30 seconds remaining in the program. Any other quick comments on that topic before we give it back to Marie for her closing comment?
Well, I know also that we have the ESRD networks on the call, and I think when we talk to them, I think I see them as the change agents. They're trying to deal with a lot of different relationships here in the project that they're working on, and I don't think there's anybody out there right now that's going to bring those people to the table. The different adopter groups to be able to talk and work together and to cooperate. So I see the ESRD networks, and I assume the QIOs would do the same on any particular project. Who are the adopters, and who is going to actually bring them together to cooperate to make the changes that are necessary? So I think that's a key role in SPREAD.
Thank you very much. Marie, your last comment?
Okay, well, I'd just like to say thank you very much to our speakers for today's call, and thanks to everyone for being with us on this series. I'm actually sorry to see it end. It seems like there's so much that we can discuss about SPREAD, and we look forward to working with everyone in the future on this topic. We at IHI hope to have plans to build the content for SPREAD on qualityhealthcare.org, and so we encourage you to be looking there for additional opportunities for learning and for sharing amongst each other. Just want to remind you to complete your evaluation so you can get your CME CEU credits for this. And also, we will continue the online discussion on qualityhealthcare.org for a few weeks following this call. And so we encourage you to continue the discussion there.
Thank you very much, Marie. That concludes today's program, Case Study with Measurement and Feedback, brought to you by the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, presented by Gail Nielsen, John Whittington, and Dr. Kellen Nolan, and moderated by Marie Schall. Today's program is copyright 2003 by the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, all rights reserved. Thank you for joining us for this program and the series, and enjoy the rest of your day. You may disconnect now.